Hi everyone, it's Karen Taylor Bass and welcome to The Hub, hashtag KTB Chapter 2. Thanks for tuning in, you know, on this journey and retweeting. I so appreciate you. This podcast is about my ever-evolving journey daily as a woman, a daughter, an entrepreneur, a mom, a friend, and everything from my hair drama to coming to America to career and the changes and in real time expectations of being a woman, not just any old woman, but a superwoman. And honestly, no one can do that. No one should even want to do that. There's a reason why we have superheroes that we could watch on the screen. And I couldn't think of anyone mo better than my friend, my girl, my colleague, half of the super talented husband and wife duo, our modern day generation, Ashford and Simpson, Asia from Kindred the Family Soul, a mama of five. She tours, she's a composer. Did I leave out a kid?
Yes, mother of six.
Mother of six, geez Louise, six children, looking fabulous, and you know, made some time to talk with me today. So hello, Asia, what's going on?
I'm good. I'm hanging in there doing what I do.
Oh, girl. So, you know, this is about superwoman and the unrealistic expectations that women, but I'm going to say black women, put upon themselves to be everything to everyone, to have to be perfect. Meanwhile, we're falling apart on the inside. We really want to scream. And I can take it back to when you and Fatine did Far Away, and I worked with you, I didn't really understand, like, I love the jam. I still love it. It's one of my favorite Kindred the Family Soul songs. But not until I became a mother and a wife did I really want to get far away. Like, that song speaks to my DNA now. Like, seriously.
Yeah, so, I mean, we're kind of like drug dealers in that way. It's like our money's on the comeback. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
People circle back to the music because then eventually their life experience reflects it.
Yes.
And they tend to not be able to get beyond that. So they're like, oh, snap, wait a minute. Like, this speaks to me in a different way than it did 10 years ago. So that's been good for us.
That's been awesome. So talk about your post last week that resonated with so many people, your followers. And if you want to follow her on Instagram, which it's a must see TV kind of thing, it's Asia, A-J-A, at Kindred the Wife. So what stirred that post?
Well, a couple of things. So there was a post going around Instagram that was addressing an issue with black women and the lack of fair and unbiased medical care that they get. So Serena Williams kind of blew this issue out of the water when she talked about her having
postpartum
during childbirth. And so what that brought to the table was a very important conversation that had been bubbling under the surface for quite some time, was that black women are 3 to 4 times more likely to die during childbirth. So I saw that meme. So then later I'm scrolling down and I see this other meme and it says, you know, I just want to love a black man so good that he'll forget that the world is against him or that racism is out there. And I thought to myself, so a black woman has to, so there was a couple of things, but anyway, so a black woman has to not only be perceived as being able to take pain at higher levels than any other woman, to the point where she's not even trusted about her own pain threshold in the medical field. So biologically, we're expected to be stronger, faster, and made of fairy dust. And then when we get back into the world, then we're expected to erase racism and all of the troubles of the world for our men as well. And I just laughed. I said, how did black women back into this trap? How in the world did we get to thinking it was our job to fix every right, every wrong? And how in the world did the perception of our strength get so out of control that now doctors don't think we can even get hurt? It was just infuriating for me. And I just simply wanted to write something to my sisters and say, ladies, look, you're not responsible for the entire world. You're not responsible for everything. You're not made of steel. And though you might be magical, honey, you are very, very real. And there's nothing, and we have to be very careful about these messages that we give ourselves about being the strong Black woman. At the end of the post, I said, look, you know, sometimes you can't play every role. If you do, it's likely that at one of those roles you will not be good at. Sometimes it's good to back up and allow the greatness to be pursued by others. And you just relax. It's going to go. It's going to be fine.
It's going to be fine. Yeah.
Go be a human being. Go, you know, have some tea. Go to bed early. Like, be a human being and let other human beings practice being better human beings and not leaving the entire fate of the world on you.
And you know what? That is Sean J. Ashe, because that is so true. And I know we all grapple with that. Like, there, I think now that I'm older, I'm better at I've taken the cape off, like, because the cape doesn't do anything for you. All the cape does is allow you to escape to the world as a perception. Like,
the cape is a delusion of grandeur.
It's delusional. Like, you, people think you have it together, but honestly, the people with the cape are hanging on by a fingernail.
Right. In the post, I said, you know, like, take the cape off and burn it.
Yeah.
Because it was funny because a couple of the women hashtag later burned the cape, and I thought that was funny. And then I got a friend that called me, because of course we live in a capitalist society, so they're like, girl, you need some shirts that say burn the cape, girl.
right. How can I make this, you know, how can I monetize this? But let me just say, to your point, I remember that when my daughter was in the second grade and she came home from school, and you know, I have a flexible schedule being an entrepreneur, and I didn't have like dinner. I didn't have the things that she's accustomed to having. Mm-hmm. And she was like, oh my God, what happened? And I was like, girl, mommy is real. Pinch me, feel me. I'm like, I'm having a really bad day. And I said, you're going to be fine. And at that moment, I said to her, mommy is not superwoman. Like, she's real. I said, she's just like you. She has bones. She has joints. Mm-hmm. She has flesh. I said, you got to think that, you know, when you come home, it's not always going to be perfect. And at that moment, I realized the disservice that we do as mothers, where the kids are so accustomed to having 3 square meals, this, that, the dietary, you know, pyramid is completed. You have fresh clothes, iron clothes, starch, your crease, your teeth, like all that stuff. Like, those are luxury items. Like, in some countries, those are luxury items. So, like, take a step back and be grateful, because what we're doing is we're raising children who are not only entitled, they are freaking ungrateful.
Ungrateful, entitled, and not
lazy. Can we put lazy too?
And lazy and not prepared for life.
Right.
Which makes us having in some level tried so hard not to fail, but that we failed at a very basic thing, that is to raise children who are able to fend for themselves.
Yes.
And so that's the whole point of being a parent. Right. And I think ultimately there's some things we're winning with, and it's time to just step back and reassess. And the assessment comes into our perception of ourselves and the fact that, you know, there is a really huge misconception about us that we've begun to own it. And the misconception is that we are, you know, and obviously, you know, Bette Midler got into trouble for quoting some craziness. But the point is that whole idea that Black women are the mules of the world, that we have somehow taken this mule of the world thing and flipped it and owned it to an extent that we are doing a different kind of damage to ourselves.
Absolutely.
And, you know, so, and Black women in particular are in no position, especially now, to buy into an idea that we are not human. We are the ones who are getting the heart disease. We're the ones that are stressed out to the point of depression. We're on antidepressants. These are very real things that don't make us failures. That's a very human and understandable thing. And I want us as women to embrace our humanity.
We have to. We have to. You know, when Zora Neale Hurston said that Black women are the mules of society, I'm sure she wasn't talking about us killing ourselves at the same time, because we know better, we do better. And you know, it's funny because my friend, we had lunch on Thursday, one of my really good friends, and my nails were chipped, right? And she was like, oh my God, your nails are chipped. Like, she was like, oh my God, like, what's going on? And I was like, I didn't have time. I said, I had to choose something, you know, go to bed on time, show up for my client, or, you know, have great nails and be a loser. I'm like, I chose to keep the nails looking chipped. I'm like, they're going to be okay. And she was like, well, I'm just not accustomed to it. And I'm like, at 51, it doesn't matter anymore. Like, you know, you should be saying, is your nail bed healthy? Like, who cares?
And this is the thing, is that it gets scarier when you think about the next generation. And so we are at that age where we do have to be concerned about the legacy, and we don't want the legacy that we leave to be this ideal that even we could not meet, so that, you know, when we're not there to tell the story, because eventually we will not be, we don't want the perception of who we were to be completely wrong. Right. And so that these young women come along and they're just saddled with it.
And I
don't want that. You know, my daughters, I have four daughters, of course you already know, I have four daughters. I'm very concerned about them understanding my personal humanity, just because I know they'll grow to be women too. So it's like, I need you to see me. I need you to see me so that you can see yourself. And that's important.
And I love what you said, I need you to see me. So let's shift gears and talk about balance. Because as you corrected me in the beginning, you're a mom of six, right? You're married, you tour, you have a full life. Asia, how do you find this balance? And do you think it's something that eludes us? Like, can we really have balance, or do we have to choose pockets to be balanced?
I think there is no real balance. I think what happens is that you are functioning, and you function at a different level of, it depends on who the person is about how much they care at that moment about what they're doing. And that caring or being concerned with that moment, it drives you. So you have to decide about what drives you. And I think that is how you balance your life, is be clear about what's driving you. So many times with motherhood, fear and shame and trauma is what drives you to stay up all night and to braid the hair just perfect and to make sure that the house is perfect when people come over so they don't judge you. You're not driven to be superwoman because that's your motivation, is in this pure growth place, and you're just that fucking awesome. Oh, excuse my language.
Oh no, I curse all the time. Fuck, yeah, it's good.
And that awesome. It's that that's your motivation. So just to make sure I'm answering your question properly, what I'm saying is that I don't really have a balance. What I've learned over time is to be clear about what's motivating me and to make my decisions in very short terms. If the moment calls for something, I try to meet that moment with the most authentic and emotion and motivation that I can find for myself at that moment. And if that means that I can't do that task, if I'm not capable of that task at that moment, I am learning to not even attempt the task, to ask for help or to say no.
I love that.
Right now.
Ask for help and say no. And what I've accepted and what I have defined my chapter two now is like, my weekends are sacred. They are right. My weekends. Like, if I'm leaving my house to work, right, compensation has got to be premium. Because those are all I have, is my weekend. Because Monday through Friday, I am bringing it. And I am giving it. So I've got to restore, and I've got to reshape and reset. And, like, it's like non-negotiable. I don't want to do anything on the weekend. If I do something, it's what I care and want to do. And sometimes that doesn't even involve my family. I just want a time out. And I'm unapologetic with, like, peace.
Yeah. And you know, and that is so key, is boundaries.
Yeah.
So boundaries are also a big part of things that I'm coming to understand fully. And the reason why I keep saying I'm coming to understand it fully is that it has been a transition. I started off being motivated by fear, shame, all the different things that I think women are oftentimes motivated by. If I'll never forget, it was like a thing my grandmother had about a children's faces being dirty. Like if they had anything on their face, somehow that was an indication that she was a terrible mother. So in that same way, I used to be motivated by all this ridiculous shit. And then now I am, you know, I'm moving into a different place in my life where, yes, I'm creating boundaries. I'm being true to whatever my motivation is at that moment. And if my motivation is whack and toxic, then I'm checking myself and saying, okay, wait a minute, what is this really about? You know, and you're not, and that, and I'm learning to communicate the things that I actually feel and not some version of how I'm coping with what I actually feel.
Yes, yes.
Those things are helping me to achieve what might be looked upon as balance. You know what I mean?
I do, because you know what? When you say that, that reminds me. One of the things I said recently to someone, and you know, I was like, I'm not looking for validation from this person or that person. I was like, at this point in my life, it's self-validation. If I feel good about it and I know I'm doing it, I don't need somebody. And before, like, you know, 5 years old, 5 years ago, or even 10, 20, I needed that. Like when you met me, I needed that. But now I don't give a rat's ass about it. And I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that, you know, I don't care about what other people say. No, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is I am defining what I view as important and what I'm doing. And then if you want to ride with it, you can, but I won't allow you to judge me and tell me that is whack when you know damn well it's not whack, but it doesn't meet your perception of what I should be doing. I grew up with that perception. I don't care about perception anymore. It's what I see and what I project.
My son said something to me that really literally changed my life.
Right.
My son is 19, and he explained to me once about expectations and emotional development. And he said to me, Mom, Black parents, from the moment their kids are born, culturally, they're being forced to meet standards and meet goals that are far ahead of what it is that they're capable of. From the moment, it's like, oh, well, such and such started walking when they were 4 months. Well, so-and-so started talking when they were such and such and such and such.
Yeah.
And it becomes a cultural thing. He said, and then when that child gets to be 18 years old, then it's like, oh, you grown. He said, Mom, in our culture, we have to understand that there are real biological, not psychological, but biological benchmarks around brain and emotional development that we are completely off from. Our expectations about what people should do at certain ages is so off. And I thought about this. And when I think about what you were saying about, I used to think this way and now I think this way. Well, yeah, at the time that you thought that, that was where your biological and emotional development was.
Right.
You weren't lost. You were just on the journey. That's life itself. You were in that particular, you know, that particular stage of development. And I think that's the part of it that many of us don't forgive ourselves for. It's like, yes, you grew and you were supposed to. And at that point in your life, you weren't supposed to be at that place of wisdom because your body hadn't even matured enough. Your brain had not even matured enough to get there. We have to get out of this mode that I'm 18, I'm 19, I'm 21, I'm an adult. I know what to do. Oh, somehow that some switch gets clicked on and there's no more development.
Right.
Absolutely not.
And we fast track our kids that way, like you're saying, because first we coddle them and then we micromanage them. Then they get to a certain age and we're like, okay, why are you still here? Why don't you do this? Why? Oh, aren't you grown? Oh, you know, where's your money? You ain't got your own money? You know, it's like, you know, after holding them forever.
You can't live here.
Get out, you know. But it's funny what you're saying because it's true. Our society, as a race, we do that. We love upon you, and then when we see the clock ticking and the zero dwindling, we're like, you ain't going to college, you ain't joining the armed services. When you leaving? What's going on?
When you leaving?
Under my roof? Oh no! Right?
And Karen, listen. Don't, and then add into that basket that is very likely that same kid, you, me, and everyone else, has experienced some major trauma by that age.
Trauma.
So on top of it, the trauma, and you're like, not only have I not reached a certain point developmentally, but then also I've been stunted by something major that's happened to me, and no one acknowledges it, not interpersonal, not cultural. Nowhere does it say that I should stop, handle this, think about it, talk about it. Nothing.
It's not easy. And I say that all the time to my kids. I'm like, it's not easy being Black. It's not, you know, I'm watching something on TV today about, you know, the NCAA, and oh my God. I mean, it's every corners of the world. You try to better yourself by playing sports. You got 700 things, hurdles to go over. And then there are more hurdles. You try to do an honest living as a man and get a job, or as a woman, or as a kid. And, you know, your profile, like, no matter where you go, there's a hoop for you to jump over. But I want to talk about love, because Kindred the Family Soul is about love, and it's about, you know, family and cohesion, and something that we need so much today, positive energy and vibe. Your love, Fatine, you know, talk about that, because I think as women, sometimes our expectations, like we're talking about growing up, we have these expectations of what a man should be, what a man should do. And just like you said, biologically, we grow into that. I do also believe that men grow into being that kind of person, because not everybody has a great role model as a dad, a mom, an uncle, an Indian maker, a chief, you know? So you grow into it with your mentors and what you see. Talk to us, inspire us about love, and what were some of the factors that made you say, yeah, this man is a keeper? Because we already know that you were a keeper.
Hell. Well, okay, so I was messy, you know, I was messy too. I was a messy teenager, and so it took me a minute to find myself. So let me just start at the beginning, because, okay, so what made us choose each other, or what I saw in my husband that stood out for me as him being a good mate, number one was, the first thing was that his willingness to share. He had a very innate type of, you know, thing about him where he would just consistently think of me. So if he had something, he always wanted me to have some. Or he always wanted me to get it too. So he's always been that person since the very beginning. Another thing that stood out to me about him was that very early on in our connection with one another, he talked about family. He talked about marriage. We were just not even really dating, like just kind of getting to know each other. And he talked about that was something that he wanted to do eventually in his life, and that was just kind of the place he was in. So for me, it was like, okay, well, here's a man who doesn't know if he wants to marry you, but he's very clear on that he does want to get married. And that helped me to decide how much time I wanted to really kind of spend around him. And I guess the third thing was that it seemed as though, and it was this way, and I see that we benefited from this over time, was that he was very concerned that our relationship, if it was going to be a relationship, that we choose a kind of relationship that he felt would be blessed and guided by God. Mm-hmm. So that was very important to him. So he told me early on, I do love you, but I don't want to be your boyfriend forever. Like, I don't want to do that, because I feel like if I say I love you, like, according to what my belief system is, I don't want to hold you in a relationship where God doesn't acknowledge this relationship. Now, mind you, that is his set of beliefs, our set of beliefs. That's not important to everybody. That's not what guides everybody's desire to be together. So I'm just kind of speaking personally about he and I. And those things are not necessary for every person. So those are the reasons why I felt that he would make an excellent mate. What has happened over the years, what I found, is that he and I have won
in moments where we had to evaluate. The reason why I feel like we've won in those moments is because we've been very honest about whether or not we really wanted to be together. And if we were confused about it, then we discussed that. And I know that sounds really simple, but at the core, I think a lot of people get married for multiple reasons, and sometimes they don't really want to be together. And sometimes people stay married when they really don't want to be together. And, you know, I've had friends come to me and they'll say, hey, you know, I'm having this problem in my marriage or X, Y, and Z. And I always ask them, well, why are you staying? What is the reason that you're staying? Why are you still in the marriage? You're unhappy. Okay, but why are you actually still there? And most times they don't say, because I really want to be here. You know?
Yeah, that's true.
Almost never. So I think that that's been, you know, something that's really kind of helped us is that we've just always been really honest about, look, before we go in here and shut these windows and close these doors and work shit out, do you really want this?
Right, right. Oh, you invested, and you both seem so invested into one another. And then the family, because the family is great, but if mano is not invested, then there's nothing.
Well, I don't want to be married to my husband for my kids.
Right, yeah. And so many of us do.
Yeah, I have no desire to be with my husband to please my kids.
Say that again, because that's just so deep. Only because that is, like, what you're saying is 99.9% of women, black women, we don't, that's not what we're thinking. We're thinking we're going to be together with our husband for our kids. But you're just saying, like, screw that.
That's not on my agenda.
Right, right. So that's your non-negotiable, correct?
That's my non-negotiable. If I'm in that household because I'm trying to make a point to my kids,
yeah.
I'm, first of all, not making a point to them. I'm making an ugly, toxic point to them. That's number one. And number two, I've totally gone off track. That's not what I'm interested in at all. I'm interested in a real relationship with somebody who really wants me. I love love too much. I love love. I want to be loved. That's a thing for me. I need to feel adoration. I need to feel connection. I don't function well if I don't have that. So for me, if I'm separated from you and we're not connected, it's hard for me to do much of anything. I might as well not be in a marriage with you.
And it's not a marriage.
And I'm going to jump out there and say my husband's the same person. Because I think he is extremely self-aware, and he's like, I want you to want me. When you look at me, I want to feel that I'm who you desire to be with, you know, and for no other reason than that I'm me, and that's it.
That's so, it.
Yeah, those are, you know, but I'll cap all of this off by saying to you, I am very careful to tell people this is what has worked for us, but I'm a true believer in that the constitution of your marriage must be drafted, negotiated, and then updated by you and your mate alone. You may take from other people or take a little bit of inspiration from here and there, but you all have to shut the windows and close the doors and do the work. And once you've made your agreement, you go out into the world and you let everybody know, listen, only two votes count in this relationship. Y'all can all go and kick rocks.
This is
what we've decided.
I love that, Asian. I think we need more voices like you saying that. I mean, how long has it been?
20 years. It was 20 years this past September.
20 years together or married?
Married.
Girl, yo.
20 years married.
Oh my God. Bow down. Look at, and you guys are still looking at each other on stage, looking at one another eye to eye. It ain't like side eye. You know, I saw you recently. No, seriously, but you know how many times your couples are together? I mean, I can speak for myself, and we're side eye. Like, you know, you guys are not doing that.
We have plenty of side eye.
We don't capture that.
I actually think that any couple that knows each other well has a side eye. Okay. That side eye is ingrained in the relationship. I don't trust a relationship that ain't got no side eye.
Right.
So I'm just saying, like, I think for what we do, we're performers. And so what we're performing oftentimes is, you know, things that affirm our feelings right. for one another. And so people do get to see that moment. But that's, you know.
I want to talk about career because, you know, mm-hmm. 20 years married, you guys have been together longer as partners, as collaborators, when you first met, songwriters. Mm-hmm. Withstanding the test of time, I have to say longevity is definitely a kindred of the family soul. Because like you said in the beginning, people who didn't know your repertoire of work now know. It's like Frankie mm-hmm. Beverly and Maze. If you guys never put out another album, you can still tour and jam, right? Mm-hmm. What do you think has been the... I don't say one common denominator, but what do you think has kept your music able to withstand the test of time more so than ever when I went to a show recently and it seems like the crowd definitely, they're couples, you know, it's everybody, it's LGBT, it's mm-hmm. everybody, it's a big family. But also mm-hmm. I saw some young millennials in there. What do you think has been the crossover success? And what do you think about that? How do you stay fresh and keep on growing and keep on putting out albums? And still, I know it's still a struggle because this music industry is not what we know, but you guys are still doing it and feeding a family. I mean, you guys look like you're eating.
Oh, very well. Well, I might add. The thing that's helped us is like what I said earlier is a universal theme is a universal theme. Mm-hmm. And it never goes out of style because people will always have family. That family dynamic may not always look exactly the way ours does, but it's family nonetheless. So their family will always exist. Love, connection, and partnership will always exist. And so it always leaves some generation to catch up because they will eventually approach these major kind of, you know, benchmarks in their life. And when they do, they'll have music to listen to that reflects it. And that's helped us. Another thing I feel like that's helped us is that we've never tried to chase a trend that we helped to create. This was not a popular thing when we started, you know, the idea of Black love. Black love has become, you know, has just become something that people are...
It's a hashtag now. Who knew?
It's a hashtag now. Who knew? And at that time, it was kind of like, oh, y'all are married. That's kitschy.
That's cute. You
know, that's cute, you know. But we stayed the course and we were honest. And I think that's really what it is. It's like we didn't never try to sell our marriage to people because Black love was trendy.
Right.
We were just talking about our life. And being honest about that life has always resonated with people because truth always resonates with people. Yeah. People know when you're lying. They know when you're trying to trump up your relationship to sell something to people. Like, they get it. You know what I mean? And we haven't escaped some of that judgment ourselves because I think people are so used to being lied to that when you present something healthy to people or something that's not in turmoil, then they question it. They're like, there's no way.
There's no way. And I worked with you guys, so I know in every way that what you see is what you get. You guys are what you say. And what I also can appreciate about you is you recently lost your mom.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that I know you will continue to, you know, grieve and feel every day. And I say that because my grandmother was like my mom, and I lost my grandmother 5 years ago. And there's not a day that passes that in the morning, throughout the day, before I go to bed, if I make an important decision, if I don't, you know, I'm always conjuring her up. She's always there. I always hear her voice. I always, you know, something will remind me. I'll see a butterfly and it'll be like my confirmation that I can do X, Y, and Z. You know what I mean? And I know you know that. And loss is something that I feel as women primarily, we don't talk about. When you talk about, to circle back to the cape, as superwoman, we are expected to grieve in the moment and continue and not discuss it and not have bad days or sad days or not feeling 100% today.
Bad year.
Yes, and just because somebody goes or is no longer with us physically, it doesn't mean that you can pick up and have coffee, you know? Mm-hmm. So I'm just here to say that I appreciate the fact that you have allowed us as your extended family to see that journey, share that journey with you. And I could honestly say, excuse me, that it's something that I, up to 5 years still, I'm still dealing with it, and still not a day doesn't go by where if I have anything important or non-essential to do, I'm still talking to her. You know what I mean? Like, what would you do? What do you think? You know? And I always say, as long as she's not talking back to me, I'm still sane.
Like, come on. But she might, you know, here's the thing that, you know, it's a wilderness. Grief is like a wilderness, you know, it's like you're just walking along, and you just come up on the thickest, unpassable brush, and you don't have any tools, you don't have anything to protect you, you're just like, and then people are like, get through to the other side, and you can't see anything, and you don't know how to get through that. And, you know, for me, I didn't even know who I was. I just didn't know who I was without my mom. Mm-hmm. And the grief came out in ways that I wasn't expecting. You know, I literally had to compartmentalize my grief just to handle the business of death, which is the, you know, the picking out of this and the making these arrangements and yada, yada, yada. By the time I got home, I was just stuck with a bucket of emotions, not knowing what to do with them or where to put them, lost. Like, I literally told my husband, I felt like someone had left me on a doorstep. And so I originally was just trying to figure out how I was supposed to feel. And then I started sharing on Instagram, like, different things. I was going through my mother's photos. And so since Instagram is obviously photo-driven, I would post sometimes photos of her or photos of us and talk about how I was feeling. And literally, it was just so I could get it out. It was just so I could get it out. And in the meantime, people have been so supportive of that journey for me. And now I'm hearing from so many people how it's helped them in their own grief. There were people who had lost parents very close to the same time that I did. People who had lost their parents 15, 20 years prior. And they were feeling very similar feelings to me, fresh out of the box. So I think for Black women, in most situations, we are expected to just recover. And I just wasn't. I wasn't the same person.
And you'll never be the same person, honestly.
It required my family to step up. And my husband, my son, but my son says something to me that, again, he's like my Yoda sometimes, my son. And he said to me, he said, Mom, you need to carve out a space for yourself. Because we don't know how to carve out that space for you. He said, we're used to you functioning in a certain way. So we need to try to not expect it. He said, but you can't wait for us to do it for you.
Wow.
You have to carve out a space for yourself. And right now, there's no space for you. We are filling up all the space.
Wow. Wow. That is a great way, Asia, to just put this together. I want to give you the last word. I want you to tell us how we can continue to support you, Asia, Fatine, Kindred, the Family Soul, because that is, you have shared so much with us throughout the years, 20 years, 20 plus years as followers and fans and colleagues and extended family. What can we do? What would you tell us to do? What are you doing to put one foot in front of the other? And most importantly, carve out that space for yourself. Like, what are you doing? We're going to hold you accountable. What are you doing?
Okay, so the first thing is boundaries. And we talked about that earlier. I'm beginning to understand and put forth boundaries for myself. I decide how long I'm going to do a thing and when I'm going to do a thing. I do it then and I do it for that amount of time. And then I decide from that moment on what else am I prepared to do, if nothing. I definitely take more time now to rest. Mm-hmm. If I need to rest, I rest. Rest, I'm going to tell you something. I'm a singer, of course. People always call me on the phone like fanatic. I lost my voice. What do I do? People who are not singers, because they think, oh, well, you're a singer. You must know what to do if I lost my voice. I always say, go to sleep, because here's the thing. You could drink all the tea in the world. You could do whatever you want to try. All of the herbs, vitamins, or whatever. If you're not rested, it doesn't matter. So I have given myself permission to rest. The third thing I've decided to do is spend more time just doing the things that I've always wanted to do. I don't wait for the best day or the best time. If it's something that I want to do, I try to do it. I just don't care about what's the best. There's never the right time. People told me, wait to have a baby. Wait until after you're this age. Wait till you buy a house. Wait till you so-and-so. It was never the right time to have a child. We had our children. They're here. And at the wrong times, each time was the wrong time. So I've learned to just do the things that I love doing when I want to do them. This is the third thing, is I am understanding the true power of a connection of women. My mother was a part of a extended network of women. She had a group of women friends who were an integral part of my growing up and becoming a woman. These women, most of them had daughters. Their daughters are now my group. We are all friends. And it's a very unique situation. And these women have held me up, literally held me up when I couldn't even hold myself up. And hey, cutie. And when I could not do anything for myself, they did. And I was telling my husband this, and I hope I'm not rambling, but I was telling my husband this, that his mother had a good friend who passed away a few years ago. Her best friend, one of her best friends passed away. And his mother was at her bedside as she was transitioning. I told my husband, I said, don't let this moment get lost on you. Having a man in your life, a mate, a life mate, is a beautiful thing. Nothing can replace that. Having a partner, because not everybody's going to have a man in their life. You know what I'm saying? Having a partner is a beautiful thing. But a friend, you understand what I'm saying? Your friend, that woman, she had had children and she had a husband. But who was there during her transition but her woman friend, her sister friend? And I told my husband, I said, this is an important moment. I want you to really witness it for what it is. This is how women survive. You are looking at how women survive. They must survive this way. So for me, I have reaffirmed my commitment to the powerful women in my circle, which is why when you reached out and said you wanted to do this interview, absolutely, I will do it.
Because, and I was honored. Thank you.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, it ain't nothing but a thing with us. But point is that I hadn't talked to you in a while. I did see you recently, but I said, when my women's circle comes forward and ask of me, I will make myself available to that, because that has been my sustainer in many, 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 many ways. So, you know, those are just my things. I love my husband. He is my best friend, which is something that I have actually never said before publicly. I've always thought a husband's a husband, a friend is a friend, and sometimes you have friendship situations with your husband, but he's your mate, you know? But I realize my husband is actually my best friend. He really is, and I hear people say it all the time, and I refuse to say it until I really meant it, and I mean that. He is my best friend. He is the person who watches my back, who thinks of me, who surveys the area, who wants me to be safe, who wants me to be successful, who wants me to have the best of everything. He's that person. He's that person. And so I am grateful for all of the different ways that God has blessed me and all of the different amazing people he's blessed me to have in my life. And I only want to give as much of what's been poured into me out, because everyone doesn't get it.
So everyone does.
For those of us who have the surplus, that is given out immediately. You know what I'm saying? It is very important.
I received that so well, because what people listening don't know is that, yes, we have known each other for over 20 years, but it didn't start out, right? A bed of roses. We have had like ups, downs, dragged out, whacked out, you know, discussion, argument, you ain't working my project right, you giving all your attention to this person, you know, but at the same time, the beauty of God, the beauty of life, the beauty of growth is that the general, a real connection that you share with someone, even when it is built on misunderstanding, as time is a healer of everything. And as time travels, you see the person for what they are. But when you are thrust in that situation, then you're able to understand the whole,
The music business, I feel you should never, and I really truly feel this way, you should never allow the music business to dictate who will be your friend.
Right.
Because the music business itself is just not set up for that. And so the music business will put you in situations where you're having fights with people and arguments and misunderstanding what their position is, because the music business is built so that no one's perspective is understood.
True, true.
It's like that everyone is obsessed with their own perspective. And it really doesn't matter what job you have. That is really how it literally puts you in your own corner.
It's a business. It's a business at the end. It's a big business. It's a billion-dollar business. And the music is such a small part of it. But what I hope I'm saying is, I am so happy 20-plus years now to call you and Fatima friend, family, and so forth, that we have been able to grow together and understand each other and support one another. And that is something that is genuine. So because it was so crazy in the beginning, we have actually come full circle to now we can have these conversations. I thought we were going to be speaking for 30 minutes. Here we are. I got my pressure cooker upstairs. I don't know what I have.
Girl, please get to the pressure cooker.
But
my kids are probably staring out the window like,
I know, like, who's that crazy lady in the car? Oh, that's my mom. But I do. But I want to thank you. And I want to thank you for dropping signs. I want to thank you for inspiring us. And I know that, you know, your testimonial today was so authentic, so naked, so raw. And I love when you have a natural fuck it moment and was okay about it. And just flow and flow with it. And I want to thank everybody for listening. And please follow this amazing woman. And I don't use that word often, but she is super amazing in the sense that what you see is what you get. She is okay with being naked. She's okay with telling you the truth, her truth. And she's also okay with you having your space. And a lot of us are not allowed to do that, but she gives that to you. So let's keep her accountable to her carving out her personal space.
Yes.
That is your accountability to us, because we want you around. We want you to be happy, and we want you. You will, like we said, loss and grieving is something that we all do, but we got to do it on our terms, our journey, our length. And we are here to support you. I am here to support you, because like I say, I grapple with it every day. So I overstand. But Asia, I love you. I thank you. And I just want to keep on bigging you up and just, you know, you are such a sister girl. So thank you.
I love you too, Karen.
Thank you.
I think it's wonderful what you're doing. It's fantastic how you have reinvented yourself without losing the core of who you are. And that's been a beautiful thing to watch and witness and see you use all of the receipts that you have and say, hey, look, this is where I'm going next. This is what I've done, and this is where I'm going. It's inspiring, and I think it's a really beautiful thing. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you.
Be a part of it anytime.
Mwah. Get out the car, girl. I love you.
All right.
Take care.